Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's take a look at the war on our border. For the first time in Mexico's drug war, the United States government is warning U.S. government employees and citizens that they could be the targets of drug gang violence in three Mexican states. This warning follows a grisly week last week where 120 more bodies were found in mass graves in the Mexican state of Tamaulipas, which borders Texas. According to Mexican government data, almost 35,000 deaths were linked to organized crime since 2006. 15,000 last year alone, including at least 11 journalists. To explain the spike in violence and the possibility that cartels are shifting their targets toward civilians and government workers is Viridiana Rios. She studies drug trafficking, violence, and corruption in Mexico as a PhD candidate in government at Harvard, and as a freelance journalist, and as a research associate at the Transborder Institute in San Diego. She recently co-authored a report with the Justice in Mexico Project, tracking the drug violence in Mexico through last year. She goes by Vidi. Vidi, welcome to WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Do you know what triggered last week's warning from the United States government about U.S. citizens being targeted by cartels?
Yes. Well, this was triggered basically by a spike in violence that has happened in three states in Mexico. Actually, when you look at the statistics of drug-related violence during the last couple of months, you realize that many of the states that used to be very violent are now controlled. For example, the border state of Chihuahua, they used to have thousands of deaths, and now they are in a lower trend. The last 14 weeks of 2010, they have about 800 deaths, and now they have only 600. The problem with these three states, Nuevo León, San Luis Potosí, and Tamaulipas, is that they have increased violence at least in 100 more cases than we were expected before. So let me give you an example. For the state of Tamaulipas, in 2009, they only had 7 drug-related executions, only 7. This year, in 2011, they had 79. Only in the first 2 months. Mm. So we're talking here about huge changes in the figures.
107 American citizens were killed in Mexico is the number that I have. American citizens in 2010, that's up from 77 the year before. I've read that it might be a sign of both disorganization and desperation by the Zetas, one of the active drug cartels, that they're targeting U.S. citizens. Explain that. Why would it be an indication of desperation or disorganization?
Well, let's put these numbers in perspective, because basically what we are talking here about is a change in 40%, right? They went from 77 up to 107. If you actually look at the statistics of drug violence in Mexico, the change in the general population is an increase in 76%. So what we are actually seeing in comparative numbers is that Americans are being killed less. If anything, violence has increased in the general population. Now, why would the cartels target Americans? I don't think they are actually pursuing this strategy on purpose, because to be sincere, killing an American is such an issue, right? Even for them. I think this is more of the reason for this happening is that they are very disorganized. It is not something that they are trying to do. The problem with the cartel is that as they are being killed in the process of this war, they are hiring new people, let's say. And these new people is less trained in the use of weapons. Normally they are younger, they are more impulsive, they really don't know what they are doing, and most of them have a huge problem of drug consumption. So what you have is these very young people that is very well armed, right, and that is in the middle of this war, and basically they are shooting people without meaning it to.
And before Americans cancel their vacation plans that they may have, either in their fantasies or, in actual plans, I've read that the cartels avoid tourist areas. but that there is a threat now by the image of Mexico as such a dangerous place, that there's a real threat to their economy in terms of tourism, also in terms of U.S. companies based in Mexico perhaps wanting to evacuate their American citizens. First of all, do these things spill over into what we think of as the tourist areas in Mexico?
Well, that's a very interesting topic, because overall the figures on tourism from America to Mexico have diminished in the last year 10%. That is something very important if you consider that Mexico, actually, one of the three main sources of income in the country is tourism. The other two would be revenue coming directly from illegal immigrants sending money into the country, and the other one is oil. So, I would say that beach places and touristic places are not violent. For example, let's take the case of Yucatan, right? Yucatan during 2009 had zero drug-related homicides. In 2010, they had zero also. And this year, same figure, right? So actually, drug trade is not in Yucatan. What about, for example, the state of Guerrero? Well, that's a different case. Acapulco is extremely violent, right? So it is not that they are not in touristic areas. It's just that there are particular zones that are basically non-violent at all.
V.D. Rios, studying the drug wars in Mexico at Harvard as a journalist and as a research associate at the Transborder Institute in San Diego. We can take phone calls for her, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as for the first time in Mexico's drug war, the U.S. government is warning U.S. government employees and citizens that they could be the targets of drug gang violence in three Mexican states. And by the way, we mentioned the one. What are the other two? We mentioned Tamaulipas. What are the other two?
The other two are Nuevo León and San Luis Potosí.
All right. Now, in your recent report, you write that there's been a shift in the targets in the past year. There have been more attacks on Mexican government officials and civilians, including 14 mayors and 11 journalists. More than 30 mayors have been killed in all since 2004. Why the shift toward journalists and officials?
Well, this is a problem that has happened because of Mexico's federalization. It used to be that mayors basically had no power of enforcement. Every single decision of enforcement was taken from the center, from the very centralized government that was ruled by a single party in Mexico. Now what happened is that you are seeing mayors finally taking over and finally having a chance to apply their own security policies. When this happens, they immediately have become the targets of drug traffickers. In this whole escalate of violence in Mexico, also mayors and journalists have become increasingly targeted. And this is basically because of the desperation of drug trafficking organizations. They are being fought as they have never been fought before. Mexico is really now making an enforcement effort that has no parallel in the whole history of the country. So they are desperate and they start killing.
Why is this happening now? How did this violence start spiking so badly in recent years? The drug trade is nothing new. Drug consumption north of the border in the United States is nothing new, and I don't think it's really taken off to a much greater height than it had been. Did we see some kind of dismantling of civic institutions or increased political corruption or something?
Well, that's a fantastic question. Actually, I think the question should not be why Mexico is violent now, but why Mexico was not violent before. We have a huge drug trafficking business going on in the country. Actually, about 80% of all of the cocaine that is consumed in the U.S. crosses via Mexico. I think there was one very important change that has turned this war on, and that is Colombia. If you actually look at the statistics in Colombia, Colombia has fought a very, very successful war against their drug trafficking organizations. When this happens, when they dismantle the typical cartels, the Medellin cartel, and all of these Colombian institutions, drug traffickers move their business into Mexico. So now Mexico is basically the main purveyor, the main supplier of drugs into the U.S. What happened with this is that Mexican drug cartels that used to have some level of revenue suddenly become millionaire, right? Like suddenly you start seeing Mexican drug lords in the Forbes list, like within the most important millionaires of the world. When this happens, when you have the profits, there are much more incentives for you to control the market, right? So then, instead of trying to only take control of their own region, each cartel starts trying to take over the region of the other. So you have a lot of inter-cartel battles, and you have a lot of wars within this market. This is interesting, actually, because Mexico is an Mexican illegal drug trade. It's an oligopolistic market. What does this mean? This means that you have several firms, and each firm is taking control of an area, right? So, for example, you have the Tijuana cartel, and the Tijuana cartel takes care of Tijuana only and all of the drugs that crosses into California. You have also the Juarez cartel, right? In these oligopolistic markets, normally you have the concentration of power of one firm in one territory, right?
Mm-hmm.
If this were a legal market, any single war that exploded between these firms would be actually a price war, right? So you would see something like diminishing prices to take over consumers and things like that. Because this is an illegal market, you cannot have price wars. So what you get is battles with fire. What you get is an actual war. So when profits have increased now that Mexico is the main supplier of drugs into the U.S., now these drug lords have much more incentives to fight.
So what are you saying? Legalize it?
No, I don't think legalization is the solution, because first, it's politically unviable. I think what we have to do is we have to use enforcement in order to control the cartels, and we have to use the market in order to generate the incentives within the market for them to stop fighting.
Joe in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Joe, thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian, and thank you, and thank you for the guest being on. I've just come back from Mexico. I have a house there in a little town in the Central Highlands called San Miguel de Allende, a beautiful little town. Our town has been peaceful and quiet, and it's, you know, geography. It's far away from where the cartels are. That's really important. The economy of my town has been severely damaged by the fact that people are not traveling, and a lot of Mexican people depend upon that for their incomes in my town, and that's really critical. But the reasons for this drug war are very much a part of our own reality. Two things. One, the fact that you light up a joint on Saturday night with your friends, no one ever thinks about what that is, what that implies, what you're causing, what you're contributing to, what you're participating in when you take a toke on that joint. Secondly, the gun sales along the border are the highest of anywhere in the United States. I think the Second Amendment, which says, you know, the Americans have the right to bear arms in our Constitution, that's not a bad idea. That's okay, you know, hunters, etc. But automatic weapons are now part of the Second Amendment, and automatic weapon sales along Texas and Arizona are the highest anywhere in the country, and they are going directly to the cartels. Our inability to control our own consumption of dope, and our desire, and a Republican and Democrats as well, politically motivated by the gun industry, sales of automatic weapons are contributing to this problem and making it worse.
Joe, thank you very much. And I'm sure you would agree, Vidi, that those are the two U.S. contributions to this problem. One, the voracious appetite of people who use one kind of drug or another in this country that needs to be smuggled in from the South, and also the illegal weapons trade that goes in the other direction from the U.S. to Mexico. How big a problem is that second one?
Well, the second one is a huge problem. Actually, there was just recent, you know, some news that show that basically the U.S. has been smuggling weapons into Mexico in order to track them and to get to see whether these weapons were actually used in crimes or not. Well, it happened to be that they did, and, well, it's actually about 90% of all of the weapons that are killing right now in Mexico's drug war come from the U.S. So we are, like, the main supplier of firepower to the Mexican cartels are
90%, the Americans. 90% of the weapons.
Yes, exactly. And now something really interesting that has been mentioned is this idea of being a consumer. Now, it is important to notice that every single time that you consume illegal drugs, you are consuming drugs that are tainted with the blood of Mexicans and with the blood of journalists and mayors and policemen that die in duty fighting against these cartels. So I think this is much more of a moral concern. It's not really about, I'm not going to consume drugs because drugs are bad for health. I mean, yes, they are, but also think about the consequences in terms of lives consequences for Mexicans.
When California had its referendum last year on legalizing marijuana for recreational use, was this seen by Mexican experts or by yourself as something that was threatening to Mexico? Because I don't think it was debated much in those terms.
Was threatening in Mexico because the drugs that were going to be consumed in California, if they legalize, were going to be American drugs.
This is good
for Mexicans because the real problem is when you have a demand, such a huge demand in the U.S. that needs to be supplied, right? And then the suppliers are the Mexicans. If America starts producing their own legal drugs and they sell the drugs within the country, then that is not an issue. Actually, there has been a huge shift in the market of marijuana within the U.S. In the 90s, most of the marijuana was coming from either Colombia, Mexico, Peru, right? But now 50% of the marijuana that is consumed in America is produced within the country.
Fred in Rockland, you're on WNYC. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Thank you for having your guest on. This is a really supremely important question here. My comment to your phone girl was that has the corruption in the Mexican army become so incisive, so deep, that the army, which could, as your guest had said, the Colombian army fought the drug war in Colombia and wiped it out, is the corruption in the Mexican army so great that it will not fight the drug cartel? But before you get to that, I just want to make one thing. Don't blame the victim for the criminal. The fact that we do, and we are the largest importers of dope, to quote a number, is not the cause of the cartels. They would find another market elsewhere, or they would create a market in Mexico. So don't blame us for the corruption within Mexico.
Fred, thank you. And Vidi, we have about a minute left. Maybe we could take each of his 2 points very briefly. Is there corruption in the Mexican army to the point that it leaves them incapable of fighting the drug gangs?
There is a lot of corruption within the Mexican army. That is not a question. There was also a lot of corruption within the Colombian army. The difference is that, first, Colombia had a lot of resources, and second, Colombia had a better intelligence. So let's go over this very quickly. When the Americans start fighting drug trafficking in Colombia, the amount of money that they purvey to the Colombian army is much more higher than the one that we now Mexicans are getting. Actually, what Mexico is getting in 4 years, it's about the same money that Colombia was getting in 1 year, right? So Colombia had a lot of resources. That was a very, very high punch that they did. In 2 or 3 years, they pushed a lot of money, and we are not seeing that money coming into Mexico.
And the Saturday night joint smoker, maybe that's just an opinion question as to whether they bear moral responsibility or not.
I don't think this is a matter of placing guilties. I didn't mean to say this in that way. What I'm saying is that given current situation, given that right now there is a war going on in Mexico that is killing journalists, smoking pot is a smoking pot that is blood, that is full of blood. Now, is this, who is the guilty of this? Obviously, weaker institutions in Mexico, obviously that the fact that there is corruption and all this, right? But given current situation, that's what you are smoking.
Well, maybe if there were just a stronger economy and other good jobs in Mexico, this wouldn't be such a problem. I gather the drug trade employs 300,000 individuals, and the economic impact has been estimated at over $4 billion. So as we all talk about the economy, maybe that's not the bottom line, but a bottom line.
Yeah, certainly the economy it's important, and even more important is unemployment. It's the fact that when you have cities, full cities in the border where Mexicans are unemployed, right? Then joining the drug cartels happens to be not such a bad idea for them, right? Because that's their only source of income. So certainly this is an economic problem. Now, that's not the only variable, because you have countries in the world that are poor, even more poor than Mexico, and you don't have this, right? So Mexico has the problem of being also a very, very attractive market for drugs, because basically we share a border with the U.S., who is the main consumer of drugs in the whole world.
Victim of geography, sandwiched between the drug producers of South America and the voracious consumers of the United States. Vididiana Rios studies drug trafficking, violence, and corruption in Mexico as a PhD candidate at Harvard, as a freelance journalist, and as a research associate at the Transborder Institute in San Diego. A fascinating and very important conversation. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Alexis Madrigal on the history of green technology. Have you ever wondered, after 40 years of saying it's the future, why have these things been so slow to make market inroads? We will search for an answer coming up next.